these before that and after that.
Matthew, you've been asking about the influence of Port of Shadows on the French New Wave, and of course, Truffaut acknowledged Port of Shadows in his famous essay about that certain tendency in French cinema. But then you mentioned Godard's Breathless and its ending, and as you noted, it is a complete reversal of the end of Breathless. In Port of Shadows, Jean is gunned down by a gangster. In Breathless, by the police. In Port of Shadows, Nellie weeps over his corpse. In Breathless, she's the one who called the police in the first place and turned them in, and instead of weeping, she gets up and continues peddling the New York Herald Tribune. Godard once said that the best film criticism is to make another film, and this might be an early example of that principle in his practice. But equally important is the notion by Andrew Saras that all of cinema is at one, and each film needs to be revisited and reassessed from time to time so that the links between old films and new ones can be noted. So that with Breathless and Port of Shadows, both films can be registered in Saras's words, there are no waves, there is only an ocean. So thanks, Lisa, and thanks, Matthew. And thank you for listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland. Film at 11.
You're tuned to listener-supported Community Radio KBOO Portland, Oregon, in the beautiful Willamette Valley.
Listen to Black Book Talk at KBOO FM every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon. Co-host OB Hill, Patricia Welch, and Emma Jackson Ford discuss African American authors and books. That's Black Book Talk every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon on KBOO FM.
Hi, it's Al Franken telling you to listen to KBOO, KBOO, Community Radio 90.7 here in Portland.
Yeah, you've tuned in to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and now we are live in the air room here at KBOO Studios with your favorite show about poetry and autobiography and just sharing words and the power of the arts and the power of literature. This is Once Upon a Time with Consuelo. And as you know, we're live here, so you're welcome to give us a call so you can participate in this conversation with Consuelo and her guest. And the number is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And I will remind you that today at 4, we're going to start our remote broadcast of the Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, top-notch jazz festival here in Portland and Oregon. And again, at 4 p.m., don't miss it. And hey, well, welcome to Once Upon a Time, Consuelo.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Here I am, very happy to introduce my guest. His name is Chris Brown. He's an experienced cybersecurity executive and management consultant known by for his innovative approach to integrating cybersecurity with business strategy. He is going to introduce himself, and we are going to have a very interesting conversation about a subject that is very important to businesses, government, financial institution, and right now that Microsoft is having a serious problem. We have the right person to explain what is going on in the world right now. Hi, Chris. Nice to have you here. We met the other day by accident, but here he is.
Thank you, Consuelo. Good to be here. So thank you for that introduction. I'm going to just share a little bit about myself and Cybersecurity is a relatively new field as fields go. It's not as old as engineering or architecture or even finance. And what I do, or what I have done in the past, is I've helped lead companies around protecting their information and their systems. And that role is what we call a chief information security officer. So when you think about what happened this morning, that's sort of related, but it's more related to how, for example, people react to breaches where somebody has broken into a system, or preventing that from happening in the first place. So I lead teams, or have led teams that did that. And that's my background. But my mission is about changing the field of cybersecurity and changing the face of cybersecurity. And that, I mean that in two ways. One is the non-obvious way. All the backgrounds, history, experience, and diversity, neurodiversity, that can come into our field and help us be better. But also the visible differences. And right now, 80%, 88% of the top leaders in cybersecurity are white men. And we would benefit from greater diversity there.
I agree. I think diversity, the word said it, multiply talent and possibility. And that is what is great about it, to bring a new culture and people who are very well educated or talented in their creativity. I would like to start with the definition. What does it mean, Chief Information Security Officer, CISO?
Sure. That is the title. It's a lot like a chief financial officer or chief executive officer. The chief information security officer is the person that's highest in a company or a nonprofit organization or a government that is responsible for cybersecurity. So making sure that systems are secure, patched, antivirus, those things that you think about at home, but in just imagine 10,000 or 100,000 computers, the chief information security officer is responsible for helping the company understand when they're doing well and when they're not, protecting those systems.
Is there a real way to protect your system?
That's a really interesting question. No, there's no absolutes.
Life is not absolute.
No, life is not absolute. And what's interesting about cybersecurity is it's adversarial. So generally speaking, if you're in another corporate leadership role, somebody's not trying to change your books all the time. They're not trying to come in and manipulate. Well, that's not true. They actually do, but they do it through cybersecurity. So we have hackers, hacktivists, foreign countries that are actively coming after and trying to undermine what CISOs are trying to do. So it's more adversarial than most roles.
Yeah, I am thinking about several cases, at least in Chile, for example. They were attacking the financial institution, banks, most of the time. And it was, and also airport,
mm-hmm.
at one time also. So everything stopped. So it has it's a very powerful industry, I might say, if I call industry. Mm-hmm. So your role and the role of people that they are involved in this kind of a profession is not only important, it's urgent. What do you think?
Yes. I mean, when I first started, there weren't very many of us, and it wasn't well understood. I mean, we talked about things 20, 30 years ago, but now everybody knows about this mysterious thing called cybersecurity, or at least has probably heard the word. And it affects all of us. It affects us. People couldn't do work today. People couldn't fly today. While that is slightly different than the average of what can happen for in companies, it still relates to cybersecurity.
Yeah, and that so that's mean the internet brought this. How this started?
So today's event. So for just a little bit of background. So Microsoft had an outage. And the outage was related to a vendor that is not directly connected to Microsoft, but runs on Microsoft Windows. And an update went out from CrowdStrike, and that ended up bringing Microsoft's operating systems down across the planet.
Can you imagine? I die. It's almost to be God. I mean, it's so much, whatever happens, it has so many consequences around the globe. And this is scary to me.
Well, it is. I mean, fortunately, we have people everywhere, chief information security officers and the dozens or hundreds of people that report to them, that are, and technology teams more generally, that are helping to protect against these things or recover quickly when they happen.
Yeah, if they have the right people and the right tools. Okay, how did you start being interested in this kind of issues, this kind of profession? How that started, your, at what time and your age? What happened? Somebody was your mentor or was...
I'll go even earlier. I was in seventh grade and I was introduced to the Apple IIe, which was a very, very early Apple computer. And there's a program that runs every time you turn it on. And I wrote a replacement for that program that asked for a password so nobody could read my disks. I've been thinking about cybersecurity since very, very early on. And that's when I got interested. When I got into the career was during college. I had a job outside of college.
Yeah, and it's because you are a very private person, or because you are curious, or because you care about damage. What motivated you to be so interested in something that was not only new, that is nice, but kind of, it's almost like to be a ghost in the world, because you are very behind, but a very important role at the same time.
Mm, I like that ghost metaphor.
Yeah.
I think it's the sense that what is mine, other people shouldn't be snooping in. And it's not, we have a phrase in the privacy world, which is related, which is, it's not that I have anything to hide, it's just that I don't want you to know.
Very good. I love it. I love it. Yeah, very good. And I would like you to introduce to our audience this wonderful story about your experience, because this program is called Autobiography. And there is a very nice story that I want you to read it.
Sure.
And we can comment after that.
Okay, great. So this is from my book. This is from the introductory chapter. Put it back together. When I was 4 or 5, I had a plastic Tonka excavator toy. I played with it in a sandbox for several months over the summer. Then I realized, I got this notion, well, I'm going to be bored with this soon. And it got me worried, because I really enjoyed the Tonka truck, but I knew it was approaching a point where it just wasn't going to be fun anymore. So I started looking at the Tonka truck toy differently. I ended up deciding to take it apart. Went into the garage, got a screwdriver, which I wasn't supposed to do, but I was determined. The problem was, once I took it apart, I couldn't put it back together afterwards. So I carefully set it on the sandbox, stacked so all the pieces were in the shape of being together, and left it. At some point, my dad figured out I had taken it apart. He sat me down and said, Chris, first, don't go into the garage. If you want a screwdriver, you gotta come talk to me. But the most important thing is, if you're going to take something apart, you have to figure out how to put it back together. Playing with things in a way you don't understand is a sure way to get hurt or do damage.
I think that is a wonderful advice, and also what a powerful experience, because that show what kind of boy, young boy you were. I mean, very curious, what is one of aspects of intelligence, and observing, and also frustrated, because you said, okay, now what I do with all these pieces, how mm-hmm. I put them together. And that create in you that life decision, I would say. Okay, so what did you, how did you explain this anecdote in your life?
So I took a couple of things from it. First is seeing beyond the immediate. You know, as a four-year-old, I think I was four at the time, my world was confined to that sandbox and my focus was on the toy. But once I realized how taking things apart impacted me, my view shifted. It taught me to look beyond the immediate. And in my career, this translated into understanding not just the technical aspects of my work, but also its broader impact on the business and industry at large. The second thing I took was, don't take things apart without a plan. I have my own limitations and I didn't seek advice. And as I ventured into the realm of business, it helped me understand and it underscored the significance of being strategic and needing to seek advice and input from others to understand how my decisions and my approaches might impact, in the case of a business, the overall mission and the objectives. And then finally, my realization that the excitement for the toy wouldn't last forever reflects the constant evolution and the curiosity that a cybersecurity career has. The importance of being forward-thinking, ready to anticipate and navigate shifts in what we're called upon to do, and how we get value and satisfaction from our work. And then finally, kind of doubling down, the last is my father's advice to seek the value of wisdom and mentorship.
Yeah, and?
Because it gives the benefit of broader and different experiences. And I don't mean in the case of the toy, I should have asked another four-year-old, or in the case of CISOs, that the other CISOs might be the best place for asking for advice, but to get beyond being a technical expert to being a business executive by reaching out to those that are beyond those that are similar to us, building networks, learning from others, and benefiting from the collective wisdom of a larger organization.
Very good. It's interesting how this experience with the Tonka truck has profoundly shaped your approach to leadership, and is in some way open a whole world for you, and you got immersed in that world. And this is one of the reasons how did you decide to write a book about it? Or what do you want to write?
Yeah, so I feel lucky that I've had, for example, this Tonka truck experience, and I've seen how it's benefited me. And I can share some other stories, like about my first chief information security officer when I was first a CISO. But the lessons that I was lucky enough to learn, and some of the mindsets that have helped me be successful. I've seen CISOs succeed, and I've seen CISOs do a little less than succeed. And so in my executive coaching, which is what I do now, besides writing the book, I get to help others form their own understanding of the world and better ways to operate. And I wanted this book to be a genesis for a lot more people that I could reach one-on-one to do the same.
I agree. I would like to remind our audience that here we are with Chris Brown talking about cybersecurity. Our line are going to be open. The number is 503-231-8187. And you are welcome to ask questions about his first experience and how he approached his own curiosity and self-development and became the man who is today. This is one thing. And the other thing is also to remind you that the Jazz Festival, the Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, is going on. It starts today at 4:00, and it will be today, Saturday, and Sunday. Everybody is welcome. And we, as always, we will be there. KB90.7 will be there. So you are welcome to visit and to have a good time. Okay, and with the second, there is another story that I like it very much that he has. But before we go next, I would like to know and the idea of the book, you mentioned how it came to you, but who inspired you? When did you realize that you are a writer? Because you are a writer, in my opinion, and you feel that way. And when that came, how old were you when you start writing, perhaps in the school or your journal or whatever?
Not many people know this, but I wrote poetry as a kid. And so my first official publication was in a junior high anthology of different things. And so I had a small poem there. But I don't write much poetry anymore. Writing in the business sense has been a requirement for my work for a long time. But it was probably 2 years ago when I realized I have something to share. I have enough of a concept here and enough of a purpose here. Would you like to participate? And enough of an audience that I think would appreciate this. I felt called to do it. I felt like it went beyond a notion of I should write a book. It's I have to write a book. I'm being called to write this book. And that's and that was the moment 2 years ago when I realized just several things clicked and I decided I had to write a book.
Yeah, I think it's great that you decide to write the book, because that will help other people that need to go in to follow your path and your journey. And this way you will give you will anticipate several of the steps that they have to take. And like we were talking before, it's in some way the book is a self-development, self-help, but also with the orientation toward businesses.
Absolutely.
So how people related to this kind of situation need to include cybersecurity in their industry or their institution and government situation.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it is. Do we have a call? No? It seemed that we did, but it went away.
It's not working.
No working our phone? Okay, let's go to the second story that I like very much, and it's called I Told Him That I Want to Knock the World.
Yeah,
you can
thank
read
you.
It again.
Yeah, I told him that I want to nudge the world. I was not a good homework doer. And when I say I didn't do homework as a kid, I mean at a legendary level. Nearly everyone in my 300-person class, high school graduating class, knew Chris Brown didn't do homework, even in some of the advanced classes he was in. Which I repeatedly landed in. This aspect of my academic story from kindergarten to high school is an indelible part of my reputation and experience from that time period.
I have an answer to that, because I was a kind of similar, and it's your creativity. That is what you were in daydreaming and doing other things, and you didn't think that that was particularly interesting to you. And this was my feeling also at the school. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. And so my AP physics teacher pulled me aside one day in my senior year about not doing my homework. And he said, "We're here because you're not doing your homework, but let's not talk about that. What do you want to do with your life?" I thought in silence for a long time. He patiently waited. I said, "The whole universe interacts. It's an interacting set of events, and the whole universe is moving in different and ever-changing ways. My hope is to nudge it just a little bit in a slightly better way." He replied, "You're in a better place to do that if you do your homework." It was the first time someone made sense about an otherwise senseless homework exercise. It was probably one of the first times I was coached rather than told, encouraged, scolded, punished, or bribed. Someone finally connected something I didn't want to do with something I did want to achieve. That physics teacher tapped into my intrinsic motivation. Intrinsic motivation is something that CISOs know a lot about. It's a very powerful thing for us to tap into.
This is another wonderful story, because this teacher wasn't only a teacher, he was a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
What I make always the difference between becoming a teacher and being a mentor. A mentor, the teacher is something that he teach right now, yeah? But the mentor is looking at you in a long vision and ask you, asking you that wonderful question, what do you want? How do you see yourself in the next 5 years, 10 years? It was the right question to a man, to a young boy like you, full of curiosity and a good observer.
Yeah, he, as you said, I mean, I still think about that story. I wrote the story into my book. It had a huge impact. That mentor coaching relationship does that.
Yeah, and this is this was another event in your life that took you to where you are today. So when the book is out, you should call this teacher and invite to the inauguration.
I wonder if I can track it down.
Like everybody does it. Okay, yeah. How does help your business?
So this is also from the book, and I'll read it because it sets itself up. While I was in college, I got my first job outside as a result of working with a guy on an undergrad group project, and he was impressed with my ability to manage the group and the work that he asked me, so impressed with the work that he asked me to come and work for him. I did. That was the early part of the internet. I convinced the company to get a high-speed corporate internet connection for doing business on the internet and not have to use dial-up. It meant they could send stuff faster and do proposals and more benefits that were probably not worth the investment for a 25-person company where less than half were computer-bound workers. But I made a pitch to the owner, and he decided to go for it. A couple months later, I was talking to the owner, and I said, you know, it'd be a good idea if at some point we got a firewall to separate us from the internet. He looked at me, clearly frustrated, and said, why do I care about a firewall? I sell cash registers. How does that help my business? I said, because security. No, I didn't. Although because security is the rallying cry of cybersecurity professionals everywhere, I made a different choice. I stopped and thought about the question and let it change how I thought about security. This was a pivotal moment in my career and laid the foundation for how I approach security to this day.
Yeah, elaborate in that. I want to know more.
Yeah, so one of the things that we do is we tend to rely on what we know and assume that others know it as well. Cybersecurity folks are really smart, and they can see the implications and the cascading effects of decisions that many other people aren't looking at, and even if they did, aren't nearly as practiced at seeing the long-term implications. But that's also a trap. That means that we go to somebody assuming that they know some parts of what we do, and we lose the message. And so the only way around that is to get really into the business. And so understanding what's important to the business is the bridge, less about the business understanding about cybersecurity.
Yeah, I think understanding the vision, the mission of the business is the most important thing. It's not only what the initiator, the CEO, or the founder of the company has in her mind. It's how she or he transferred that vision to his employer. That is very important. Okay, I will tell my audience, our audience, that right now our Air Room phone seems to be not working. Maybe it's a cybersecurity problem. Who knows? And people call, but they can't hear us. So maybe some other people from other planet. Who knows? Good. If we are listening, they're listening to us in another place, great. So an advice is sue us as they call. The call come in, they will go alive. this is what he said here.
Alive.
Okay. You see, I am so alive today with these two guys here. So again, as soon as the call come in, they will go live on the air of this wonderful station. So please keep trying, because persistence is one of the things that cybersecurity also has to have.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we haven't talked about who are the author that you were reading when you were not doing your homework. What were you doing? You were playing music, you were creating music, because he's a musician also.
A little bit.
Ah, Wayne, don't be so humble. You are a musician. From the moment that you create a piece of music, you are a musician, okay?
Fair.
That you don't make a living as a musician doesn't matter. This, we are not here to check your financial situation. We are here to talk and share your talent. That is what is important to me, especially, and to Ender, and to this wonderful station. So go ahead. Okay, here we have.
Oh, wait.
Hello, can you hear me? Okay. Can you hear me? Oh, wow, okay.
Okay.
Give me 1 second.
Yeah.
You're gonna go.
Oh. Yes. Hello, hello. He could? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, yes, hello.
Hi. Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead?
Yes.
Okay, hi. Thank you very much for letting me talk on your platform. Great commentary, Mr. Brown, Chris Brown. I wanted to ask really quick, because becoming a CISO and being, you know, a cybersecurity professional in your early career, but more importantly, mid-level career, could you talk about what's the real expectation or what you think is a really good kind of training or you know, matriculation for someone that's trying to move from middle management up to the CISO suite, the C-suite, and what they need to consider when they're thinking about that type of jump in career?
Very good question. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the question. So one of the mindsets that serves us early in our career is this sense of competition, this this vying for knowing a lot around cybersecurity and technology, and that serves us really well early on. And the best single piece of advice that I can give to somebody trying to get to that next level is that the next level requires letting go of that identity. So there's many trainings you can take. There's courses from Carnegie Mellon, if you're familiar. There's online courses you can take. As we've talked about, mentoring and coaching are very important in this space. But letting go of needing to know all the technical things, that's the first one. The second one is get to know people in the business. Make friends with people in human resources. Make friends with people in finance and sales and marketing and product development, because your understanding of their world prepares you to be the CISO.
Very good answer, because yes, what we were talking before, who we are and who, what kind of a job or profession we have is intimate related. And we have to understand why are they doing what they're doing and what kind of a business they're leading. What do you think, ma'am?
Oh, I totally agree. I really appreciate that answer. Because it's not something that's readily available. You have all of these different types of training in our space, and even some career development, but to really get a really concise and straightforward answer to say, okay, what does it take to be a CISO? What is the real, you know, the pathway to it? That was a really easy answer, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, very good. And
thank
we
you.
Do appreciate that you have the patience and the persistence to keep calling.
Okay.
So have a good day.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Bye
bye. Have a good one. Bye bye.
Hi. Se fue. Hi. Hello. 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 Yuhu. No.
Hello.
Hello. Yes. Hello. Good. Good morning. It's still good morning, I think. Yes.
Yeah. It's still good morning.
Yes.
I had a question for Mr. Brown.
Okay, very good. Go ahead. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Brown. How are you doing?
Good.
I had a question just kind of following up on what you were just talking about in terms of career guidance. What tips would you give a CISO in terms of mentoring staff who can potentially grow into that role? Eventually, because the
sure.
CISO is going to move on and you want to grow that talent in-house as well. What kind of tips would you have for something like that?
Yeah, and this would apply beyond just the CISO. It's any type of leadership role. But it's helping them understand how you think about problems and how you frame problems. So, you know, junior staff tend to come in very much thinking about a specific part of the solution and less about the broader implications, organizational challenges, and importantly, what your goals are, or what the function's goals should be, and what the company goals are. So helping them understand the environment, helping them understand what's important to the business, because you're closer to it, allows them to make better decisions, allows them to understand the purpose of their work more, which they're already passionate, but really understanding the purpose of the business helps make that even more so. So those are a couple of things that I would offer to mentoring and coaching more junior folks.
And I think when the book will be published, that will be a very good tool also to read the book that Mr. Brown is writing. And so this way they can have a textbook, almost a textbook, that will encourage them to have that attitude in their environment.
Yeah, thank you. And absolutely, the premises of the book, it doesn't require you to be in the CISO role or even a senior mm-hmm. role to apply it. It can apply to anybody. And in fact, some of the people that have read early versions of it said, you know, this can apply to any field that's new or any staff in a technical area that's junior. And so somebody suggested it would be good for artificial intelligence or DEI initiatives, because those are really new fields. And so the way the book helps leaders and contributors orient can be very helpful in all circumstances.
I think high school students at the end level, before graduation, they should read a book like that, because they are the generation that they will be doing business the next 30 years. And they need to have in their mind that curiosity and that vision, how is going to be the world in the next 30 years. Mm-hmm. And this way, like you said, I was working the other day with artificial intelligence, asking to make a sentence for me, and it was brilliant. I mean, I thought, do I need to write anymore? Is this thing is going to replace me? Okay. It's kind of a fair question. It's scary, too.
It will replace little pieces.
Yes, I know. I know. It will not. Okay, let's go with the next event that shaped your life the way it is.
Sure. So this was a couple years into my career, and I'll let the excerpt introduce itself. Early in my career, I progressed from system administrator to a programmer to an operations and security manager, and then on to a management consultant role for a mid-sized consulting concern. There was one of the few elite boutique healthcare management consultancies in the US at the time, recently acquired by a larger firm. One of my early engagements was to provide HIPAA, which is the Healthcare Information Portability and Accountability Act. It's some of the forms you have to sign when you go to the hospital. Was to offer security training to nurses at a large regional hospital system before the HIPAA security regulation came into effect. This is probably dating me a little bit, and it was a long time ago. Because it was my first user training rodeo for a paying client, my engagement colleague delivered the first session, and I observed. This guy was a heavy hitter in the field, one of the first real HIPAA security consultants, smart on cyber and the regulation, and not the kind of consultant that misspelled HIPAA. I delivered the second session. It fell flat. My colleague explained that I hadn't explained what the purpose is, why anybody in the room should care. I took it to heart and committed to doing better. An hour later, I delivered the next session. In short, the nurses were all again explaining why they had to remove a privacy screen protector from their monitors. This was a time period when nurses' stations were not configured for privacy, and the whole idea of privacy and security was relatively new. A woman in the middle of the classroom said, "It slows us down and gets in the way of providing patient care. I don't care what you say here. I'm going to continue to rip off the screensavers, and so will everybody else." She then went on to explain that she was the chief nursing officer. Crap. Despite the obvious commitment from the CEO and the CIO to comply with regulations, the chief nursing officer was literally saying, no, not going to do this. I had no doubt that she would likely win that battle, and if she didn't, that others like me would walk away with a metaphorical scar or two and possibly a limp. She just had that kind of authority. I didn't have a snowball's chance of arguing with her directly. I moved on and continued with the training, but I also started to listen because the chief nursing officer basically gave me the gift of scaring me enough to set aside my agenda and listen to her and the comments and concerns from all of the nurses in the room. Listening, it hit to me that the central concern for a nurse is patient care. In one of those flashes that I'm still thankful for to this day, I had a glimmer of an idea, and before even developing where I was going to go with the question, I asked, when do you stop caring about patient care? The chief nursing officer, who had been honestly, kindly, and politely entertaining me and the training, now shifted. What do you mean? Do you stop caring about patients after discharge? No, we want them to go home, recover, get well, and stay well. What if a patient had a situation where they were ashamed of, and a neighbor visiting someone else was walking the halls, saw this patient's info, and went home and blabbed it to all the neighbors? You discharge the patient, and when they get home, the neighbors who are talking about them are asking questions. The patient gets stressed, stops participating in the community, and then ends up avoiding follow-up care out of shame and embarrassment. A long pause. The screensavers will stay on the monitors, the CNO said clearly and with the same authority I had seen earlier. I knew every nurse in the hospital was going to be told what happened by those in the room, and we're going to now be on board with at least the screen protectors and likely a whole lot more. This situation challenged me and changed me. My central questions about cybersecurity became centered on, how do I reach this audience? It's similar to the question my former boss asked, why do I care about a firewall? But this was deeper. It was fundamentally human. It was emotional, tied to personal values, and tied to an entire innate and cultivated set of passions and beliefs. It ties to a worldview and a self-identity. If you've never worked with a CNO, they are some of the most toughest people on the planet. I'd put even odds on a battle between a CNO and Elite Forces Special Marine. In both cases, they do it because they care so much about what they do, and they're going to do what they think is right. Get them on your side, and you have an ally like no other. For the chief nursing officer to change her position over the course of a 50-minute training session, it created something in me, a spark of possibility, and this understanding that the way to reach people is connected to something they already care about.
Excellent. What can we say? I think it's what makes us human. That is, we are not a machine. And this, your flexibility to see other possibility is, like I have said all along, your curiosity and your capacity to diversify right there in the moment. Wonderful. I mean, you have the perception to see, I cannot go this way because I'm not going anywhere, so it's much better that I change. And look, with COVID, this thing became super important, privacy, that what happened if a co-worker knows that you were sick and then you come back to the workplace. Yes, there's a lot to do with privacy also. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
It's not only to the big company, it's our personal life that can be in danger if some of the disease or problem, financial problem that we have had or other story become public in a way that nobody is protecting.
Absolutely. There's I have a phrase that I sometimes say, company, community, country. And yeah, cybersecurity cuts across all of those and affects all of us.
In one way or another. And there are more legislation about the protection, isn't it?
Well, there's always new legislation. We don't have anything big pending right now. There's some things in the works, but most of them are unlikely to go. But this is at least around general cybersecurity. There's issues like the TikTok ban, which is about national security, and that won't affect companies per se, except for those that advertise on the platform or use the platform. But yeah, the cybersecurity is starting to affect international politics. It's at that level.
And what country do you think is more developed in this area?
So there's a, you know, there's several countries that have advanced cybersecurity capabilities, and then there's several countries that use it in blended warfare. And so some of the obvious players, for example, the current conflict in the Ukraine is an example of blended warfare. So there's cybersecurity aspects to that, physical aspects of that, and information warfare or psychological warfare that is largely coming through electronic platforms that are all intended to shape public perception, public attitude, and this is all part of war. It goes all the way back to dropping leaflets way back when leaflets used to be dropped from planes over enemy territory to try and get the enemy's citizenry to turn against its government or at least not support it strongly. That happens in the electronic world as well.
How interesting. And going back to the book, when do you think the book is going to be published?
Oh, that's a really good question. I'm in third round edits, and so I believe one more round of edits will be enough to get it to the copy editing phase, and then it's probably a month from there.
Okay, and
so let's say 2 months from now.
Okay, 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
Oh, reasonable. And what are your expectations about it?
So my expectations are that I will roll it out over time, meaning like preview copies and that whole process of sharing it with friends, getting tweaks and feedback, colleagues, that'll happen in the next month or so. And then beyond that, it's a whole new world for me, publishing, marketing, that I'm learning as I go here. And so this has been a little bit of an adventure for me. The process of writing the book, it's been challenging in that I've had to think more deeply about things that I thought I knew than I ever thought I would have to think about, because the whole book and all its ideas have to hang together. And so that's what a lot of the first and second edit is. And I'm sure I'm going to learn something unexpected or several unexpected somethings during the cover design, the subtitle part, the layout, the illustrations, getting it printed and bound, getting it into marketplaces. Like
Are you going to print it? Is it self-printed, or are you going to work with a publishing company?
So
what is your idea?
So this book is self-published. And the reason is I wanted to get it out earlier. Everybody I spoke to said it would be a year if I could, you know, from the time of finding a publisher,
yes,
to get through the process. And yes, it's just more immediate for me. And I was also, frankly, you know, as a new author and an unknown author, it's pretty hard to get publishing deals. So I sought a lot of advice, and it was suggested to me, self-publish the first time, make a mark, get some sales, and then for your next book, which I'm already thinking about 4 or 5, for your next book, then go to a publisher, because they have a finished product and they know what you're going to deliver.
Yeah, I think you're doing the right thing also, because this way you have more control, and how you are learning a lot about the publishing business. It's good that you can control your books as much as you can. Otherwise, you will be in an unknown territory without cybersecurity, that for sure.
Right.
Okay, I would like to remind our beautiful audience about the jazz event at the Cathedral Park Festival. Today, start at 4 and go until Saturday and Sunday. And our wonderful station will be there. And now I would like to ask you about the piece of music that you wrote, and we are going to listen.
It's funny, I was... you had suggested offering a piece of music, and I picked a couple songs, shared them with my girlfriend, and she's like, why don't you just share one of yours? I was very hesitant, but we went through and picked one, and I don't know where we'll play it, maybe at the end, but it's just a piece of electronic music I put together
What is the name?
You know, I have weird names and I don't even remember.
Fantastico. Fantastico. Bueno, this is the father. Okay, in the meantime, we can get the call. We have a call. Hi.
Yes, hello, this is Russ. Hi, Chris, how are you doing?
Good, Russ, how are you?
I've been pretty well. Full disclosure, Chris and I go way back. We've worked on a couple of projects together.
Thanks, Russ.
Very nice. Go ahead.
Hey. Yeah, so Chris, I have a question for you. I think, you know, the theme that I gathered from, you know, the majority of the conversation relating to professional life of cybersecurity folks really has to do with understanding the business and how we can be there to support the business. I do want to get your take on how we balance, you know, the common phrase around, you know, security being everyone's responsibility in the business. You know, how we balance that perspective in terms of educating the business and not, you know, going too far to the right where, you know, cybersecurity is only there to support the business without any business involvement or, you know, the business actively taking responsibility to be educated. Yeah, how do you balance that?
So it's an interesting question, and it's not one that we can answer directly. And so what I talk about in the book is building relationships. So how do you build relationships with these stakeholders? How do you make your conversations relevant, interesting, and oriented to the other person so they have an interest in having a conversation with you and the sense that you actually care about their part of the business? This is the foundation. From there, it's a little, there's tools and techniques in the book that talk about this, but the relationship itself forms a type of collaboration. And it's on the basis of that collaboration that you jointly come up with ideas that work for the business, work for cybersecurity, and meets everybody's goals. So it is through these stronger relationships that that comes about, and you will figure it out in the relationship what you need to do.
Okay, I think that is a very good answer to his question, very nice. And we need to put the music because we are finishing the program. And I really want to give opportunity to listen to Chris' creativity in a different way. And with an unknown title of the piece of we are going to listen. Actually, or did you find it?
Yeah, I found it. It's Breathy Space Bongo.
Oh, my goodness.
Like I said, unusual names.
Nice. I like it. Oh, beautiful. Okay, here we are again. And I would like to say bye-bye to our wonderful guest that brought that beautiful piece of music. And you have the floor, my dear.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate being here. I'm excited about the book, which will be out in a couple months, titled CISO Impact. Although it's geared towards CISOs, it really speaks to us as humans and how we get trapped in our specialties. And I hope it impacts the world in that way that I spoke about in 12th grade and improves the world just a little bit.
Yeah, the best way to impact the world is impact individuals, one by one. And these individuals are impacting other individuals, telling why you don't read this, why you don't give a chance, and maybe you can meet the author. Probably we will have a second session when the book is out, so we will celebrate the bird, finally, of the book, and we will talk about the impact on you and the impact of the people that have been reading the book and the feedback that you have been receiving and how and what are the new projects for the future, the second book. There are no one book without a second.
Right.
Has to be. And what idea are you having, and how you are approaching other companies and other way to develop your own business and your own vision about it.
Well, thank you. I would love to come back share what I learn in the next phase of the journey, both in terms of what my audience experiences and how it is to get through marketing and all of that. So would love to come back.
Yeah, I think also would be very interesting to relate the cybersecurity to the publish industry in a way that how much of ownership you have in your piece, in your book, and how can you develop also different aspect in the published company. I think is in need to. The published company has been, in my humble opinion, very, very versatile. It has changed with the internet and the ebook and self-publishing. Who would have thought that you could do that? And so we need a different view, and maybe your own experience will bring, and when you finish with the experience of publishing your book, you will have a different view, and you will see a space for you to bring and develop new tools. Myself, for example, I would love to about the marketing, and because the book you are working on, it's not only about, like you mentioned several times, it's not only about cybersecurity, it's about management, leadership, vocation, consistent, persistent. There's a lot of things, and everybody should read it.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's an interesting parallel here, right?
Yes.
In cybersecurity, we sometimes think, if I do good work, that's good. And I don't have to advertise or market or talk about myself. And when I first started the book, I thought, well, I'll just write the book and put it on Amazon. And it's the parallel of you can't just do that has become really obvious as I've worked through this. So that little bit of, yeah, you can do great work, but you have to be able to talk about the work that you do as well.
Yeah, one of the things that you mentioned also across the show is the networking. I think it's very important. I have been even thinking about myself, and that I have been always very individualistic. I grew up almost by myself because my brother were older and men, so alone. I have been doing all my kind of thing very lonely and alone, lonely and alone, two different things. And now I regret it. I think that was a big mistake, and we need others. We need to be related with our peers, people who are doing exactly what we do and also who relate very much, and they bring to us different experience. So it's one way to grow. What do you think?
I agree. I agree that it's important to have people who have shared experience, but I also think that there's space for innovation, creativity, and broadening horizons by building relationships with those that are unlike us. So in my world.
Yeah, for networking, I wasn't thinking only the people who are doing what we do. I live in a diversity. Well, okay, here we are. This is the last moment, the last minute, and my boss is looking at me like, cut, 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 cut. So I will cut, and I hope to be with you again, next Friday, the other Friday. And I would like if somebody wants to visit us and come to the program and to be interviewed and has a passion for books, literature, creativity, music, whatever way of showing creativity and innovation, they can call me to the station and I will be very happy to invite them to the program. Thank you again to the station, to Ender, to Chris for being here, and for everybody. Thank you. Bye-bye, Will.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM and streaming on the web, kboo.fm. I'm Don Jacobson, and moving on, we'll be here in just a few minutes right after the news.